Welcome, everyone. My name is Trishna Malik, and this is my first episode, I'm so excited, for my podcast, The Chai with Tea. And before I get into who my guest is, I want to give a little backstory really quick. I am a transracial, sorry, I just touched my mic, transracial and transnational adoptee. And I'll be using some of these terms, and I want to explain what that is. Transracial means I was adopted into a different race. Transnational means I came from a different country and came into this country. So I was adopted into a different country. I am a transracial and transnational adoptee from India. I was born there. We do not know like any history or any information on my birth mother and birth father other than that they weren't married. We think I was born in a hospital, and 2 days after I was born, I was put into an orphanage or a foster mom. There's some pictures that were brought over with me that kind of tell like it was like an orphanage or a foster mom. And I was there in India for a year as an orphan. And then after a year, I was brought over to America and adopted into an all-white town, all-white family, and white parents. I went through a lot of struggles, adversity, and racism, which is why we're going to talk about this. These are conversations that need to happen for adoptees and for those who are going to adopt. This is important, and I'm really excited to have you guys all here. Before I start, I want to do a couple trigger warnings. One, for adoptees, we will be talking about racism and things like that, so I just want to, you know, kind of give a heads up ahead of time. Number two, my mom and I have, which that's my guess, my mom and I have had these conversations many times before. So the comments of where like, I would never allow my daughter to talk like that. Like this is, we're at that age and that time in our lives where these are the conversations that her and I have. We've already talked about these things before. So just giving a heads up, like we're comfortable with everything we'll be talking about in this podcast. And I had one more thing. Oh yes. Also, adoptees, we all have different experiences and different traumas. So no one is the same. So a comment like after this podcast, well, I know another adoptee and they don't go through that. They never, of course they didn't, because everyone is different. So I just want to start off with that this is my experience and this is my story. So grab a snack, relax, grab a cup of chai, and enjoy the chai with tea. All right. That was kind of long, right?
That was.
I feel like before we start, we need to like clink.
What if I spill it?
Don't. Mom has a Grinch cup, Grinch. I don't know if you guys can see, but Grinch little slippers on. We love her. We love her anyways. Did you take a sip?
Oh, I said I'm probably going to spill it.
Yeah. This is my mom, everyone. This is Georgiana Helmick. Georgie Helmick, my mom. And we have so much to talk about. And I feel like this conversation is so important to have. You and I, again, talked about so much of this stuff, like on
over
phone
the years.
Calls and years. Chats. Again, I live in LA. I keep touching my mic. Sorry. I live in LA, you live here, and things that happen, you and I will be literally on the phone for 2 hours chatting about something that happened, something that was said. And people have told us so many times, oh, you guys need to write your own book. We should write a book because there's just so much to talk about. And I want to get right into it because we have so much. So you and Dad adopted my brother and me. My brother was adopted locally here. And again, I was adopted from India. But let's start from the beginning. What made you adopt kids?
Well, Dad and I were unable to have kids together. Mm-hmm. And we wanted a family. And so that was a route that was open to us. Plus, you know, good friends of ours, you know, mm-hmm. Your godparents also adopted locally and in India. And we saw that, you know, that's how they built their family. And we thought that was a good idea. Also, I have a little throat problem, so.
Just. Well, that was actually my next question, was what made you adopt outside of your race? And you kind of just said, you and dad couldn't have kids. So, and also, which is kind of like, I guess crazy is kind of the word to use, your best friends at the time as well could not have kids.
Right.
So you saw them adopt first,
right,
a kid locally, and then right, they also adopted internationally from India. And I take it that, again, you saw her, their daughter, and right, just fell in love with her. So that's right, when you said you wanted to adopt.
Right, right. So we used the same agency, the same caseworker, and, you know, went through the process. Mm-hmm. And also, too, had them to fall back on if we had any questions or, you know, a little confused about something. They were there to help us
right,
through.
Right.
Yes.
And so what were the comments like in the beginning when you told everybody you were going to adopt Kyle? Because, again, you adopted Kyle first, again, locally from here, not transracial. So what were the comments like when you told everyone you were adopting?
We really, there wasn't a big time frame with Kyle. Whoops, was I supposed to say his name?
Yeah, he's your son. He's fine.
Sorry. Hi, Kyle. when we were going through the process with Kyle, we were counseled not to tell anyone, family or anyone, that we were in the process of adopting because they said that you have to deal with their questions and comments and
right,
you know, all that, along with your own feelings of this is taking too long, why
right,
why do you need all this paperwork?
I would assume too, like, if the adoption didn't go through, then
exactly,
it's like you've already told everybody and then the adoption doesn't happen.
Exactly. And
right,
that can happen.
But you didn't have any comments like, oh, you're adopting from, that's not your child. Like, you didn't have any, nothing was ever said about Kyle.
No, because again, we didn't really.
Okay. So you didn't really tell anybody.
Discuss it with anyone.
But no, and one then, from the family, extended family, like your
no
aunt,
one,
no one.
No
you
one.
Didn't tell anybody?
I don't know. No, we
I
didn't.
I don't think I knew that.
No, we didn't. Hmm. Because that's what we were counseled to do.
So basically you adopted him when you got him. You're like, surprise.
Well, it almost was like that. We found out, you know how you remember these important, you know, parts
yeah,
of your life. It was like 7 o'clock at night. I was called from the agency and said, we have a healthy baby boy at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday. Do you want him? Dad wasn't even home. He was at work.
Mm.
So, of course, I said yes for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was the day before Thanksgiving. And we were to pick him up on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. We did go to the immediate family personally and mm-hmm, told them that we, at this point, you know, we were going to get a baby boy.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting him on Monday. So on Black Friday, here we are out buying baby stuff. You know,
yeah,
we had nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think that that's with adoption, that's kind of how it is, where it's like you find out and you only have like 2 seconds to grab everything
right,
and everything.
Right.
So my point in asking that was, so then what was the difference though, when you told the family that now, okay, you have Kyle. Kyle was here for what? You guys had Kyle for a year?
He was about two when you came.
Okay, so he was two. What now were the comments like when you were now we're going to adopt a second child, and this time she is going to be from a different country.
Right.
So she's going to be from India. What were those comments?
Right, because we... you know, of course, you have a ton of paperwork for
mm-hmm,
both adoptions. And, you know, we had put on the paperwork that we would be open to, you know, most any country, but kind of preferring India because that's where, you know,
your
our friend's child was from.
But you said, and I didn't know this, but the other day you told me that you had actually checked off other countries that
yes,
you were okay with, which I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, so now then we're, you know, in the course of conversation, talking to family members and saying that, you know, we were adopting out of country.
Mm-hmm.
And we did get some flack about that even as...
What, like what?
Well, there's all, you know, there's all kinds of children in the United States to adopt. Why don't you adopt them?
Mm-hmm.
But at the time that you and Kyle were adopted, they were, once you got a child, you were no longer considered childless. So it would take a lot longer.
Oh, okay.
And you might, you know, have to have like an older child and like that. And at that time in our life, we, you know, wanted little ones.
Right.
So they said that, you know, out of the country, you could, it probably would be faster.
Mm.
So, but we did have, you know, the flack about, you know, you're not getting from the United States. And I kind of wanted to say to those people, well, we did, you know, we did get one from the United States, and it's kind of like, what are you doing to help, you know?
Yeah, you also said that some of the comments were, again, once they found out you're getting from India, well, how dark is she? Like, I wasn't even here yet.
Yeah.
And like, my skin color and the value of who I was being talked about. They said to you and Dad, well, how dark is she going to be?
Well, and
where's she coming from?
Yeah.
Like, what if only black men date her?
Well,
like,
the comment was even saying, I don't care who you adopt or from where, just as long as it's not a black child. We were told that. And then when, you know, about 6 months into the process, they sent us paperwork saying, this is your child. And, you know, the child was named Trishna. Mm-hmm. There was no last name or anything. And this is your child.
Mm-hmm.
And then the comments were, well, you know, what if only black men will date
her? So let me just say this. So they actually look at Indian people as black.
Yes. Well,
so they group us all together because we all just look alike, because we all have the same culture. I'm just being sarcastic and ignorant.
Oh, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So
dark skin equals black.
So I just want to ask, like, but don't you feel like that wasn't like something that clicked, like maybe this isn't a good idea because you're putting that child in a toxic environment?
No, I just figured the person that said it was an idiot, and that was kind of...
You do realize, like, that's literally all your family.
Well, no, it was not as much.
Okay.
Yet. There's two sides of the family involved.
Yeah, and I mean, from what you said, it came from both sides of the family.
But one side was a little bit more.
So again, the value of who I was before I was even here was being talked about, like the color of my skin. So once I was here, did you feel any like animosity from those people? Did you feel like they treated me differently or treated you differently in that sense?
Because of that, I was very aware, and I was always watching in the background, almost like, you know, looking to see if there was any treating you differently, mm-hmm. being a little unkind to you.
Which we're going to get into because it did happen at some point.
Or dismissive or like that.
Yeah.
But as a little one, I never saw any of that.
Yeah.
You know, and I was aware of it.
Which is going to make me go into this part. So once I was here, now my brother's here that was adopted. I also have another sibling that's my half sibling. And while you do say that you were watched for certain things, the dynamic once I was here, though, with my siblings was not great, though. I will say that. And that's one thing us adoptees talk about is putting two adoptees. Again, when you have adoptees, there's a lot of trauma that comes with it. Whether you're little or even you're a baby, there's trauma. I mean, they always say, adoptees, especially me, I knew loss before I knew love. And so coming into a household where Kyle was already here, my brother was already here and probably had trauma that was already starting, and then putting me into it, there was a dynamic between my brother and I, and even like, you know, my other sibling, it wasn't great. Like they did team up on me and make fun of me.
Right.
And, you know, and I love the one I love to death, but you know, it was, there was a little, there was that where I was treated differently because of where
right.
I came from. And, again, I was coming into the space that was different, you know,
but,
as a different person.
But in that case, I didn't see it being a different color issue. I saw it as,
but he did.
You were replacing, you were no longer, your other sibling was no longer the only girl. And at this
right.
point, you are now the little one and now you're daddy's girl and
mm-hmm.
and you know, and then even with Kyle, you know, he's no longer the only sibling here.
But let
me
just say, there was color comments made though.
Yeah. especially as time went on.
Especially when I was little, there was color comments and knowing that it would hurt me.
Yeah, right. Oh, so it was said to hurt you.
Right, right.
Or to make you, you know.
Yeah.
Respond.
And also, again, being in this environment now that I'm here, I grew up in an all white town, all white family. I think like maybe 3 people of color, maybe in our town.
Well, and
maybe at that time.
Well, and understand our school in the same building is kindergarten through 12.
And I think there's like 3 people.
Right. 3 people from kindergarten till 12. You're not even just talking about your class.
And I don't want to get there yet because I want to talk a little bit about growing up in the younger years, how to explain this to everybody. And I know adoptees that are watching this are so going to understand this, but where it was like, once I came here, it was like I was tokenized, but also again, not liked. How does that even happen? It's like, again, even with my grandparents, when I was little, I was loved. I was invited into the house, family functions and stuff like that. But I also know they didn't like people of color. I was okay because I was being raised by you and dad.
Right.
I was looked at like, you're not like the rest.
Yes.
And that was also something I picked up on, you know, as like very, very young.
Right. Insulting or making an unkind remark about anyone of color didn't include you.
Right.
In their minds.
Right.
In their minds.
Right. And that also grows into being young. And there's so many, oh my gosh,
well,
so many instances.
Out about church that I didn't remember that
part with grandma, one of my grandmas walking me around during church and showing me to all her older friends and being like, Trishna, where are you from? Tell them where you're from. And I'd be like, Bombay, India. And it was like, I was liked and tokenized, but also at the same time, I also know my grandparents don't like people of color. So it's like, how do I dissect that? And especially now that I'm older, was I loved, or was I just tolerated? But I want to get into though, again, we're still talking about me being young, but certain incidences that happened that you started to notice then as I got like, you know, like 4 or 5 years old. One of them we talk about all the time, but we were at this place called the Hot Dog Shop. I was young and my brother was there too. And I happened to be sitting there just eating my hot dog, minding my own brown business. And actually we were minding our business.
Yeah.
And I called you mom. And again, I think I was like 4 or 5 years old. And there was this guy that was sitting across that heard me call my mom and just unhinged, like very upset, came over and was like, there's no, what is this? Like she can't be your mom. Like, what is this? What is this dynamic? Like she's a brown person, you're a white person. There's no way that's your mom. What is, you know,
she should not be calling
you that. What is it to you, sir? Like, but again, I was 4 or 5 and I just remember thinking, I do remember sitting there thinking like, man, okay, so this guy doesn't like me. I remember feeling embarrassed. Because he made a big deal. Even the waitress heard. Everyone heard.
In fact, she kind of said that he inserts himself in other situations.
Obviously.
Too, that you know, so he was, you know, a very opinionated older gentleman.
And this was one of the times you did say something to him, like you explained it. And you're so nice. Like you're not a confrontational person.
No.
And you were so nice because I remember you just being like, I think you said like, this is my daughter. I adopted her, blah, blah. Like the fact that you even have to explain yourself. I mean, if someone did that to me, I'd just give them the middle finger.
Yeah. Again, we're 2 different people too.
Yeah.
we found that out in your college years.
Yes. Which we'll get to.
Yes.
But even just like, I feel like just going out with you guys to like Walmart when I was younger,
yeah.
I, again, 4 or 5 years old, I'd be standing right next to you at the register and they're cashing us out. And finally, like a person that's cashing us out would like look over at me and be like, can I help you? Well, I wasn't with you.
Well, that was when you were a little bit older in that you should have your own groceries or something.
Or something like that. Right, they didn't think that we would be together.
Right. Which is, you know, remember when we would go to the mall.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'd look down at you, they'd look up at us. They'd look down at you, they'd look over at Kyle.
And let me also say, like, even though at that age you don't really know what racism is, I think for me, I definitely caught on that obviously I was different.
You were different.
And also that this was different. Yeah, just that this our situation was different, and it made me feel less at times because, again, no one else was going through this. And it had to do with me all the time and something right. about me that was wrong, you know, and that's right. something that I caught on when at a very young age.
Well, just because you were different and kind of seemed no matter where we went, it elicited conversation.
We would just be out to eat.
Yeah.
Right. And again, we were out to eat, and my mom remembers, and I vaguely remember this one too. There was my mom and I, my brother again, and there was, I think, two women, and you could hear them in the background just talking, and they were just yammering about, like, okay, so that's probably her. Is those her children? But the one is brown. So how could that even be? Mm-hmm. And like, and I think there were times, now that I'm older, I wish you would have like gotten up, and we'll talk about that.
Well, and also too, you know, we've told you that
yeah.
since, you know, what happened at the school and stuff, that we wish that we had handled it differently.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, we'll get into some of that, you know, at some point here, but even just like, you know, I think it was hard with all like the racial slurs and stuff like that came from family members. So it was supposed to be my aunts and uncles, and even like, you know, my grandparents. That was, and they did it right in front of me.
Yeah, I remember when we left one of the grandparents' home because of, yes.
Remind me, because I'm trying to remember that
well,
one.
Well, that particular grandparent was saying, well, we talked
How
about
old was
it the
I?
Other day.
We left the home. We left their house.
Yeah, you were quite young then. You
I might, don't remember this. Tell me.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it the other day when we were talking, when Mm-mm. they called you the sand.
No, but that one was when we were in when they lived in Georgia, and
no, that was
we pulled up to a gas station and there was people of color standing outside, and I say people of color because I don't even remember if they were black or brown.
Oh, sorry.
And they used the N-word on them. You yelled at him for saying that and said, your granddaughter's right in the back of the car and sitting here, she can hear that. And then that's when he said sand N-word, because that's what they call my people, and to upset you. But again, I remember that. And again, it's just, I wasn't that young. I was maybe in like middle
and
school.
They thought it was funny.
They think it's funny. I mean, yeah. I say young, I was middle school at that point. I know what racism is and stuff, you know, but just how much that affected me, you know, and made, again, was I ever really loved, or was I just tolerated by them?
Again, as I told you, even, you know, always, all through your life, I always looked for acceptance.
But do you know what looking for racism when you don't experience
well,
it?
Well, again, according to my experiences, you know, I couldn't look at it the way you would.
Right.
But I was trying to, you know, in my mind, protect you from, you know,
right.
stupid comments from.
Well, and we're going to roll into that now, because as we get older, I'm in high school, like middle school and high school now. And again, understanding racism a little bit more and the things that have happened. I remember like middle school and high school, there was a lot of things that happened that were a little bit more, especially like racial slurs that were apparent, not saying that they weren't with
well,
the grandparents.
Well, again, everyone on the basketball court, you know, attributed, you know, your dark skin equals black, so therefore they could call you the N-word
and,
on the
right.
basketball
And I think
court.
What is crazy, and I think when I tell people this, that they think that it's crazy that I am a South Asian Indian from India, but again, where I grew up, I was considered and put in the black box. I was considered black and
because
treated
that's
as
all
such.
They knew.
That's all they know. So when I tell people that, you know, again, that didn't grow up here, they're just like, that is like the craziest thing. Like, I can't even, like, they can't even imagine
right. There's
that.
Probably not an Indian in, what, a 10-mile radius?
Well,
you know?
my doctor Seriously. Growing up was, but
well,
I mean,
true,
that's like a
true.
Couple towns over, right?
Right, right. But I'm talking, you know,
and
10,
I think,
10 miles
so one of my
way.
Very first situations that happened where I actually spoke up, I was in seventh grade, and this girl during lunch called me the N-word. Yeah. And
because you took her boyfriend.
I did not take her boyfriend.
I know, she said you did. Yes.
which didn't happen often. Let me just say the boyfriend thing didn't happen often, but he liked me, and I think he had liked her at the point, but he ended up wanting to go out with me, which what is going out at seventh grade, holding hands during, you know, lunch. But yeah. And again, I didn't hear it. I know a bunch of kids had come up and said, you know, that she had called me that. So I remember, I think it was the next day, I mustered up the courage, and during lunch, I went up to her and I went off on her in front of everybody in the lunch line. Everyone could hear, basically the whole cafeteria. And I gave some speech or whatever. It was pretty good.
Well, it had to do with that, you know, I'm brown, not black.
And if I was black, there would be nothing wrong with that. I remember saying that.
And I don't appreciate being called that. And then meanwhile, though, you never told me that.
I didn't. There was a lot of things I started, I think, around that age, not telling you things because, again, a lot of stuff started to happen. I feel like sixth to seventh grade is when things really started happening for me and where it would affect me. Again, when I was younger.
Understanding more.
Yeah, so there was that. There was sports, you know, on and off the field. I'd come home and say, oh, yeah, someone called me a towelhead or whatever. Which, speaking of, that one time we were at during basketball, again, minding my own brown business, eating a Snickers bar in the bleachers.
Well, you were playing.
I had just played. And I was eating a Snickers bar, minding my own business. I don't even think there was anybody else, like, sitting around me at the time. I think they were still in the locker room. And the other team yelled towelhead across the gym, and even my parents heard it.
Well, then they put their hoodies. They put their hoodies on their heads.
Yeah, and
for turbans.
I know, and I remember running up to you guys again. I'm like trying to just eat a Snickers and mind my own business. I ran up to my parents and I was like, "Y'all heard that, right?" I was like, "You and Dad." I was like, "You heard it."
We didn't hear it, but
no, you did.
One of your girlfriends, team members, came up and told us that they were doing that. So then, you know, we kind of said, well, you know, what's Trishna doing? And they said she's laughing, which is your defense mechanism.
And I think,
too.
Again, a lot of us, especially transracial adoptees, one of the coping mechanisms is to just laugh it off.
Right. And pretend
it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
And also making fun of our own story, making fun of ourselves.
Yeah.
Because, again, how it's that or you cry. And at that age, you don't want to show that.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it was just making fun of myself. And
before someone else does.
But I think that time I was a little bothered because it was so apparent. And I went up to you guys and I was just like, I think we all kind of trying to figure out, what do we do? Do we say something?
Again, that's one of the biggest ones that we wish we had handled.
Yeah.
Had handled it differently. Mm-hmm. I mean, we stayed with you then. We walked, make sure we walked with you out to the bus and all of that. And what we should have done and what we
didn't say anything. And I think for me, again, I started to get in that coping mechanism where I'm like embarrassed and I don't want anyone to know about it. Again, other than one other kid in my class that was black, but no one else. Yeah. And he was biracial, but no one else was going through this. So it was like, I didn't have anyone to really talk to about this or, hey, what do you think I should do? You know, there was, because no one else was going through it.
And neither did we.
Right, as white parents. You didn't know how to handle racism when you don't experience it the correct way in that sense at that
Plus,
time.
Plus, you know, everyone has to realize during this time, and even when we were in the process of, you know, paperwork and getting you guys and that, there was no internet.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't Google anything, you know.
Right.
It wasn't there. And so...
There was also other times that I didn't say anything. I think this was like about like ninth grade when there was a boy I really, really liked. I hope he's stepping on Legos every single day to this day.
Who is it? Tell me.
I'm not telling you who it is. And I really liked him and I asked him out and he said no. I found out he said no because he wouldn't date me because of the color of my skin. And
because he couldn't take you home to his parents too.
Right. What? I mean, like his parents knew who I was though.
Oh, exactly. Everyone knew who you were.
Right. And I just remember, again, that mechanism where I didn't say anything. I got really embarrassed. Again, no one else really goes through this. Maybe, again, the two people that were my school, maybe they were going through it too, but we didn't talk about these things back then. It isn't like what it is now. And I kept it in. My best friend at the time had told one of the teachers. And so the teacher called us all in and like rang the boys out. And again, as much, and I give a shout out to this teacher for doing that, but also at the same time, it made me feel embarrassed again, because again,
I was singled out again.
And that's, you know, it was just a whole nother thing. And there was something else I wanted to add to that. I didn't tell you. That was what I didn't. And I, that was another time where I didn't tell
you. So, you know, so we're blissfully going along. You know,
Trish, everything is fine, and I'm doing
Trish is happy at school. And I was at school all the time too, volunteering in that. So I didn't see anything. You know, so we thought she was doing fine.
And as we go into, again, now we're getting into high school and stuff. And that was, mind you, that's just middle school and high school. I want to talk about really quickly, though, why I feel like when all these racial experiences and traumas happened, why I didn't tell you. I, at the time, I didn't know why. Now, again, I'm older. I can understand things, dissect things. One, I think even though I'm middle school, high school, I couldn't really truly articulate what I was feeling. And then at that same time, having to explain that to you guys, where again, you're white parents that don't go through these things. And for instance, I remember telling you about, I think, a girl that had called me, made fun of my skin, of course. And again, you telling me as a white woman, oh, but you're beautiful and you're pretty. I think for me was like, but how do you know? Like, how do you know? Well, there was things I couldn't get from you that I think I needed if I had a black or brown mom to fully understand. And I know that may hurt you, and I don't want to hurt you. And when I say that, but
no,
I feel like there was something like,
white.
Well, I hope
I have a mirror, no, but
you get what I'm saying? Yeah. I think there were those things also, and not to discredit or put this on another sibling. My other sibling at that time had a lot going on with their own issues. And I feel like
you were put on the back burner a lot.
I was put on the back burner a lot. My emotions, my feelings. I felt like there wasn't enough room for my issues.
Or time.
Or time.
Or energy.
Yeah.
Because.
And I think his were this my other siblings was this big. And I think to me, at that time, the racism, the little things that were this small. So understand, all that stuff was adding up throughout the years.
And again, you didn't have any way. You couldn't go on Facebook or on or Google or something and
a way to
see this. Right. In the same way with us, we were so, we were, and I agree with you, you know, we were so wrapped up in the other issues that were going on. And you didn't create any problems.
That and
that we were aware
of. And again, that I kind of just, and again, I put even for myself on the back burner. Again, it adds up as the trauma goes on, which we'll get into where it kind of hit me. But I think that that was one of the reasons why I didn't tell you. And I also feel like people that I've grown up with, a lot of my friends didn't see it. So they're just like, what are you talking like? What are you talking about? You were class president. You were on homecoming court. But racism doesn't matter. Racism doesn't care how much money you have. Racism doesn't care how popular you are. Look at LeBron James. He had the N-word spray painted on his house and he's LeBron James. It doesn't matter.
That's a good point.
So there's a lot of misunderstanding of what racism is. And that it was happening to me. I just never really spoke up on it. So I feel like, again, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but when I speak on it now, people are just like, and it's people that have known me, my classmates that maybe were watching, so like, I never saw you go through the, what are you talking about? You looked like you were fine, but I wasn't.
Exactly.
And I didn't know that I wasn't too.
Exactly. And again, we didn't know. And I mean, I was up at the school every day. I never saw or heard anything bad.
And I want to also add, like, there was no representation for me, not only in my town or my family, again, being an all-white town and family, but even in media. I never opened a magazine or turned on the TV and there was someone that looked like me. You know, I think the first time was finally like Bend It Like Beckham. And everyone, even when it first came out, that was the first like South Asian Indian like on TV or in media or anything. And everyone thought we looked alike, which we looked nothing alike. But because it was the first thing, you know, I didn't even have that. So I feel like even I look back, I thought I was confident, but really I had like my identity was, there was an identity issue with me.
Well, and you always appeared confident. And I think at one, I remember you saying later on, again, we didn't realize that, but you did, you know, there would be black girls on other basketball teams and things like that. And, you know, so then that, at least you had something to,
a little,
it was too fleeting,
right?
You know?
And I think my biggest frustration, again, that eighth, ninth grade year, being told I wasn't good enough to date because of the color of my skin. But then,
you were pretty. You know, that's what they told you. You're very pretty. You're funny. You're popular. But I can't take you home to my parents.
Right.
You know.
But then they'd go and ask out or date Sarah, Jessica, and Becky that spent $200 to tan to look like me.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I mean, not to be, but like, look at all the girls that, like, all my best friends. I keep touching my mic. Sorry. All of my best friends. And again, nothing wrong with this, but understand my frustration where I watched all my white friends tan during homecoming and proms. And it was like, so you're tanning to look like me. You want to look like me, but you also can't take me home to your parents.
Right, right.
You know, you can't date me. Which kind of rolls in. I have one more funny, not funny, but it's just, you look back and you're like, what the hell? Okay.
Bleep.
So ninth grade, I was asked out, by another guy, like, couple towns over. He was a black guy.
Oh.
And
he, so the prophecy came true.
Yes.
Only did. Black guys would date you.
During ninth grade, I went to a homecoming, a different school's homecoming, and I had a black date. And we, like, our situation with having to, I wanted to get ready at, I'm going to say my uncle's house,
a relative's house.
And they do not like black people or brown. Again, remember, I'm okay because I'm with them.
But I didn't see anything that day, did you?
No, but the fact that you had to, you had to ask him permission if he, my date, my black date, could come to his house and we could get pictures. Only just because he was black.
Yeah.
And it was just like, seriously, the fact that we had to ask that, that shouldn't even been a thing. And we shouldn't even be affiliating ourselves with these people. But that's, like, again, another thing to know that, okay, our skin color is less. Again, adding up to these things.
Right. Well, remember when you got your nose.
And also on top of that, when I got my nose ring done in high school.
I was telling a family member that we were going to go get that done.
And this family member, I'm going to say aunt, I don't care. Aunt said, aunt. I say aunt because everyone makes fun of me because I say aunt. Aunt is like the aunts, you know. Yeah. Anyways, an aunt told me.
No, they told me.
Well, no, I was standing there.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, I was standing there because I remember hearing it and her saying, why does she need her nose pierced? That's not a South Asian Indian thing. She's American. American.
No, I said that it's a cultural thing. In fact, a lot of times it's done at birth practically, you know. And she said, well, you know, you're American. Why would you get that done?
Right, right. I want to move into... at the same time of going through racism and trying to dissect this, put it on the back burner, I also find my love for music and being a singer. And that came through church, that came through, you know, school choir, things like that. And I found something, an outlet, I guess that's the right way,
something I was good at. Yeah.
And
not everyone else was.
Not everybody.
You had talent.
Singing is a talent. It is something that I truly feel like you're born with that. So. Yeah, my love for music, and especially ninth grade, and really, that's when I...
Well, and you had a teacher that, you know, wanted to develop that, too.
I had a couple great teachers and band teacher.
The family, you know, dad can sing.
Right, right.
Kyle too.
But also at the same time, again, all the stuff I'm already experiencing... To add, I just want to be like God to the gods, Indian gods. Why did you give me this on top of all the other stuff I'm going through? But again, this talent has gotten me to be where I'm at right now. So I can't hate on it. But
plus, we spent a lot of money on it.
Too. Yes, you do.
She loves when I point that out.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I need a minute, honey. On top of that, it also gave another reason, I feel, for people to dislike me. And I think people are like, how can you dislike someone that's a singer or that's good at singing?
But it put another spotlight on
it. It was another spotlight for Trishna as the brown skin girl. you know, to be good at something. And yeah, I'm going to pull the race card a little bit. I think it had to do with because I was brown. And again, like you said, adding another spotlight on me. And again, we definitely experienced that. And I will say there were actual teachers and people that worked at the school that were not nice about to me right. and you about it. When you would walk by, it would be like, it's the Trishna show. And, you know, yeah. like who does that to another kid?
Yeah, which, and even at the program that is in question, you had the exact same,
I had as many solos as some of my other friends. We had the exact same amount of time during
time
the
on
show.
Stage, yeah.
And yet Trishna was the one that was getting singled out and hated on for it. Yeah. And I was like, my other friends Trishna have the show. Same amount. Yeah. Like, why? So that was a huge thing. But also that rolls into, I remember right before we get into college, but I had a teacher that actually took me out of class. First off, at this point, my love for music also got me into a music college, one of the top music colleges in the world, Berklee College of Music in Boston. And I think I found out that around like junior or senior year. And
yeah, you found it. We didn't know anything about
yeah.
it.
And I remember I got accepted. I auditioned. You took me. I auditioned and everything, and I got in.
We're snowstorming.
Oh, yeah. That
history.
Was horrible.
Yeah,
I remember I auditioned. My hair was all wet, sopping wet and everything. Yeah. I was, like, so stressed. I was being actually kind of mean.
A little bit. But the street, this was, again, before UPS. Good Lord. GPS.
Mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. And, you know, all of the street signs were covered in snow.
Yeah, it was
and
insane.
Somehow that was my fault.
Oh, yeah, I know. But so after I found I got in, I still was in high school. I was like a junior or senior. And there was this one teacher that took me out of class. She took me in the hallway. And I remember her actually having this speech and this conversation with me about how I shouldn't go to this college because I will never come back to this hometown. It's not a good thing for you. And like, this was a small town girl that got into the top music college in mm-hmm. In the world, but also like just again like that was such a huge achievement, and she was discouraging me
yeah.
to not go
yeah
and I just remember being like, man. And again, I worked so hard to, like I spent years and hours and days upstairs learning how to sing and learning every lick and run, and I didn't even learn how to cook because I was always
yeah yeah.
Which now I'm really good cook. So, and you're surprised at that. But,
yeah, so.
But yeah, I just like, I didn't even learn how to cook because singing was everything to me. And this teacher literally took me out and discouraged me to go. And again, I think now I look back and I just can't help but be like, but why was this only ever happening to me? You know, why did they take anybody else out of the class and tell them that they shouldn't go and that that's not a school they should be going to and insert themselves,
right?
You know, and again, it also added on to again other people already not really being behind my singing and kind of making fun of me and the ignorant comments.
Well, and you know, we were told that you should not, because you know, you ended up being president of the class, president of the band, president of choir, and all this stuff, which they're all elected positions.
Right. It's not like I chose myself. They voted for me
right,
to have
right.
that.
You know, and, you know, we were told that was too much Trishna
right.
in school.
Yeah.
You know, so.
High school and middle school and high school was definitely a lot of trauma. A lot of things happened. Childhood, middle school, high school, it all kind of, it added up. A lot of the things that happened. And that's going to move me into college and
right.
and
which,
what
which
happened in college for
eye-opener
me.
For all of us.
Yes. And that's when a lot of things started happening. So I think we're going to stop here and we'll get into college here in a little bit.
And drink some tea.
And drink some tea.
One thing I want to ask you, remember the conversation when we were talking about the basketball thing yesterday?
Should I say that though?
I don't know. I didn't know if you
Do you think
to.
I should add in about how there was people that were good at something else and they were never hated on for it? Yeah, but like,
but it was a very specific thing because we were talking about basketball and how the town sports sports were everything in this town, and they still are.
Still, yeah, basketball.
And they would never say that to someone playing sports.
A boy, a boy.
Well, and we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, so maybe we should add that, and we can always leave it in or take it out.
I was going to say, you can add it in.
Yeah, why don't you do a separate segment, like right now, just that, and then we'll stop.
Okay, and then I need to pee, and then we can start into high school.
You were supposed to pee before we started.
5 more minutes on this.
Okay, let's do it.
Label it.
How should I say high school?
Oh, one more thing.
Okay. One more thing. I want to give this example, and I know I gave it to you the other day, and a couple of my friends are like, man, that's a really good example. I watched other boys be so good at sports and be the best and be in the news, be so good at that sport. They were in newspapers. They carried this town.
Well, our town is known for having a good basketball program.
Correct. Yeah. And I watched, even at sixth grade, you know, boys that were, that spent that time on and off the court and working hard on their craft, just like I did up in my room. And I never saw, or again, we, not that I saw, I never heard them ever say that they were hated on for it, or it's the blah, blah, blah show as they got, they walked on to the court.
Right.
Yeah, they were applauded for it. They were liked for it and encouraged.
Very much encouraged.
I did the same thing with music and with my voice. And yet I was kind of like made fun of for it, or hated on for, or disliked, or I got the eye roll. But I never saw those boys get that.
Right, right.
So that's just something, you know, to think about. Like, again, do I pull that race card and be like, it's because you are a brown skinned woman doing this, and also a woman, the woman card too. Right. I've never heard like any of these, and I'm going to say white men or white boys at the time be hated on for being good at something.
Well, and even with music.
What do you think about that? Me saying that, what do you, how do you feel knowing everything?
Well, I agree with you.
Yeah.
And they're applauded and encouraged.
Right.
And in the paper, and you know, even the little sports, local, you know,
can I just say,
thing.
You and Dad, I could never imagine you guys ever hurting another kid for something they're good at.
We love on them. We love on
you.
All
know what
them.
I mean? Like, I could never see you guys saying the things that have been said to me. How you and Dad could ever say that to another kid,
well,
person's
and,
kid,
and even the opposite in that those. You know, kids that we're talking about that are wonderful basketball players and that, we get hugs from them all the time.
Right.
They know we support them because they were here after the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that basketball team came and helped us clean up after the tornado because we encourage and love on
Absolutely.
Those kids.
As you should.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's how you should be to other people's kids.
Exactly. That's just it. And, you know,
whether they're good or not. Let me also say, whether they're good or not.
Yeah, there wasn't every one of those boys dragging a branch was not a star, but they played on the basketball team and we love them and stuff. And it's a double standard and it's separated.
Yeah. Okay.
Back.
And we're back. Welcome back, everyone. In our first half, we talked about a lot of trauma, a lot of things that are adding up in my life that I hadn't talked about, I hadn't addressed, which we are going to get into the college years, which are very important, and a lot of things that happen during that time. Before I do want to again give a trigger warning to the adoptees that are watching this. This is, talking about racism and a lot of trauma, so I just want to let everyone know about that ahead of time. So, without further ado, let's keep going because we have a lot to talk about. Because this is when it starts to get a little juicy. I don't know if that's the right word, but it gets interesting. At this point, I got into Berklee College of Music, which is in Boston, Massachusetts. So I was leaving my hometown. And I have to say, you don't know this, but the day that we left, my dad has a pickup truck. We loaded the pickup truck and we drove there because we were moving me into my dorms. Mm-hmm. And I actually remember I was crying in the backseat of the car and you didn't know. And that was
probably because I was crying too. No?
Well, no, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. But I think it was just because I was leaving you guys. I mean, you're with me, you're moving me in, and I just was leaving something that I've known my entire life.
Well, your little cocoon.
My little
world.
Bubble.
Yeah.
And I just remember leaving and I was crying because I also think I knew something big was about to happen for me. You know, something. This was going to change me And right. I was excited, but also nervous. And, you know, that was it. But yeah, so one of the biggest things that happened for me, I'm hearing my kitty.
I was just going to say the cat screaming.
Yeah.
Where's dad?
One of the biggest things that happened for me in college, once I got to Boston, again, I went for music. The one thing we were learning at college, my music college, is finding ourselves as artists. And I was diving into different genres and my love for music and finding different things that I loved and liked. And I was growing as an artist. And at the same time, I was growing as Trishna outside of music. And with that came the adoptee fog, which I didn't know that at the time. Now I know that what that term is. And I'm going to say what it is just, and I'm going to read it off. So it's perfectly said. The adoptee fog is when an adoptee comes to terms with the emotional consequences of being adopted. So all that trauma and all the stuff that I had gone through, it was starting to come out and I was dissecting it. Again, I think with music, when you're really in your emotions and finding yourself, it was almost like therapy. Mm-hmm. And this was when I finally, the fog started to clear and I started to really feel at this time, I really started to feel, I don't know what they're doing. Are you guys doing everything okay? Okay.
The cat's screaming.
Okay. At this time, with college, I was starting to feel the fog was clearing, and things started to become. I was becoming more aware of some of the things I was feeling, and things that had happened to me, and I was questioning a lot of things because again, I was growing. I was finally in diversity, right. Again, all white town, all white family. I was re-educating myself out of my own ignorance, things that I had been taught. Educating myself, being put in diversity, different cultures, different people. And I was changing in a good way. I was growing. And with that, again, the adoptee fog started to clear. And at that point, I started to, when I would come home, and I said this in a speech, my adoptee speech at the BIPOC event, I started to set boundaries. And I started to say, hey, that's not okay to say. Stop saying that to me. For the first time in my entire life. Mm-hmm. Again, all the other things that had happened, I was always silent or I was embarrassed. Now I was fighting back. Now I was speaking up and I was saying, this isn't okay. No, do not say that to me. I was setting these boundaries. And I think for you and dad, you had never seen me be like that.
Right.
And again, this is also when social media had just started coming, started coming out. Facebook wasn't what it is right now. It was then at that point, it was a little smaller. It was more just for college kids. And I was using that as an outlet to talk. I was using my music as an outlet. And I think for you and dad, you're like, who is this girl? Who is this daughter? Right, because we've never seen you go through this. We've never heard you speak up. What's wrong?
Right, right. And even just your vocabulary changed.
Yeah.
You started adding words that we didn't, we didn't use here at home. And so that was...
I was angry. I think when I started to dissect, again, the adoptee fog, when you start to dissect all the things that you have been going through, all the trauma, all the things that have been said to you, how I allowed people to say those things to me and didn't speak up, that's when I was angry. I was angry phase of like, no, not anymore.
Well, and everything, if you will, set you off.
Yeah.
You know, you were so angry about those things that even something that wasn't related to that or part of that set you off too.
Right.
You were angry. You were verbalizing it in an extremely angry way.
And also understand, I didn't know how to articulate myself, why I was feeling these things.
Right.
And at that same time, I started cutting off everybody. And it wasn't just everybody. It was just people that I know at that point that wasn't substance, that wasn't giving me good vibes, good energy, that wasn't for me, that wasn't getting it, that I set these boundaries. You're still crossing them. And again, to be fair, that was a lot of our family members. That was on both sides.
Well, and you were calling out people, even other people. And
not yet at that point, I wasn't doing that at that yet, but like I was saying, again, when I came home, I was no longer going to accept racism and racial slurs to be said to me or said in the same room. And again, unfortunately that came family members, and that's when I started cutting them off. Yep.
And it was the very first thing. There's a set, I can remember it. It was the letter that you wrote to your family.
Yes.
Which caused.
I had written a letter to my family, setting
that
my boundaries.
Was only on one
and it
side,
wasn't,
though.
Yeah, it was one side. Yeah, it, but one it wasn't even a bad one. It was just saying, I'm not okay with this anymore. I'm not okay with you saying X, Y, and Z. It hurts me.
Well, and you were defending me too.
I was defending you because they had treated you horribly. They knew we were close, and I feel like that was a whole nother thing. But yeah, I felt like this was a pivotal moment. And I think for us and our relationship, it was rough through my 20s. College time in my 20s, it was rough because you couldn't understand why. Again, you saw Trishna being silent, or Trisha not speaking up, or Trisha letting it roll off her back. Well, now I wasn't allowing that. And you had never seen this girl before.
Right. And plus, too, that wasn't the way we handled things.
Right.
Which, you know, we've talked about, too, that, which is part of the reason why you did also handled it the same way. But then we were still handling it that way, and you weren't. And we're kind of like, what's going on here?
And now I can explain this. Then I couldn't. But we don't. Again, we're both women. Now I'm at the age I'm at. We're both women. We don't fight the same way in this world. We don't have to fight the same way. No. I have to fight every single day to be heard, to be seen. And you don't. In the sense, you are still a woman. Yes, I get that. Women, all women have to. Yeah. But as a white woman, there is still a privilege for that. So at that time, I was you've never had to fight the way I've had to fight.
Right.
And it still will always be that, unfortunately.
Right.
And I think that at that time, I was fighting for my life, and that was the biggest thing, is I had to cut out, unfortunately, town people, family, close people that I've known for years to survive.
That you were brought up with.
Yes, and I had to. I was not okay. Yeah, I was not. Yeah. I was not okay. Like, I was not okay at that time, and I knew in order to survive, I had to cut those people out. Which brings me into, at this time of coming out of the fog, I started getting hate mail. Let's go back to, again, the fact that Trishna's a singer and she wants to be a star, and she's at Berklee College of Music now doing her thing. And I also got into acting as well at this time. And I started getting hate mail by people from my hometown.
Some of it was anonymous.
Yes. Some of it was anonymous, like as in they would make up profiles. Some of it was, I laugh about it. Now I laugh about it. It's not funny. But boys that I graduated with, or a couple years older than me, that never would have even given me the time of day. Like, some of these boys, I've never even actually had a conversation with them. And but they were in my DMs calling
town.
Me names.
Yeah, everybody.
It's a
knows.
Small town thing. It's and people that are watching this that are from here are gonna be like, that's kind of rude. No, it's not. It's unfortunately a stereotype thing that small town, that's what's gonna happen.
Everybody knows everybody.
And it did affect me. And it wasn't just from these boys again that didn't give me a time of day that I never had a conversation with ever. And they were writing me hate mail, calling me names. I'm talking the most ignorant sexual comments,
vile comments.
Let me also say that they even sent my husband at the time, my boyfriend, they saw that again on Facebook, again, that was more of a college thing and it was not what it is now, saw that I was dating this guy named Jeffrey. And they sent my boyfriend at the time, my college boyfriend, hate mail as well. And I just remember we were at a bar and my boyfriend comes up to me after coming out of the bathroom. I can say Jeffrey, he's my husband now. And he's like, do you know so-and-so? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, I went to school with them. Why? And he was like, they just wrote me the most nastiest email ever. And I was like, how did they get your email? And he's like, I don't know. Again, I think it was through Facebook. Our emails were tied with our emails. And they had written him hate mail. And again, this is like hate mail as in like, you're a piece of crap. You're never going to get anywhere in your career. Calling us names. There was even like sexual comments made to me.
Very much so on a typical way that.
Right. And it wasn't.
That you get ahead.
It wasn't even just them. It was It was family members as well at that time as well.
Well, they were joining in on in conversations in the
right
thread.
Yeah. Right. There was, yeah. And again, it was family members. It was also people from my hometown. Again, so add that onto the adoptee fog and coming out and setting those boundaries, adding that, the hate mail, it was just like, I was on 100. That's when I feel like I was like angry. I was like, I'm done with everybody. I was kind of, I hate to use the word because to me, it was justified, but unhinged in a sense. I was just like, I'm done with these people. I'm also coming from a Christian background, coming from, you know, church. I sang a Rihanna song and I was told, I got hate mail and was told I was going to hell. And mm-hmm. I also let Barbara know that she was going to hell too. So I'll see you there. I'll save you a seat, girl.
See, these are things we handle differently.
Yeah, that's how I would handle it. Mom would be like, oh, honey, bless your heart. Yeah. And yeah, so that I know for you and Dad, that was rough for you to see.
Well,
me do that.
So at that time, yeah. I mean, we still talked. We were still very close and stuff. But
right.
There was a lot of tension.
Yes.
Maybe that's the word between you and, mm-hmm. you know, and us too, because we weren't understanding either. Mm-hmm. And we just thought that, you know, you went from a tight Christian community and family, and then you go there and all of a sudden, you know, all hell breaks loose,
right?
You know, and we didn't understand either.
Right. We're running, running, we in this life.